This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Good to be with you, Matt and Brett. Dr. Joe Eastman's going to join us here in just a few minutes, talk about the latest COVID model that we'll get to that with him. Brett, you did, I'm presuming, watch some of the fine women's NCAA final game last night.
Actually, I was pretty busy all weekend. I didn't really get a chance to watch much of any sports.
You didn't see any of it? You didn't see any
of
that?
No, no men's, no women's. No, I was busy doing other things with some friends over the weekend. Had a chance to see some I haven't seen since like the pre-COVID days. So, yeah, a little busy doing that stuff. So, didn't get a chance
to. Oh, sorry, Mr. Higher Than Thou. All right, fine.
No, I kind of wished I would have. Especially the North Carolina Duke game, but then the women's obviously too.
Well, I was mainly focusing on the women's game because of obviously being here in town. South Carolina is good. Just FYI, if you did not see, they beat up on UConn and Paige Beckers last night. I am not a great sports mind, but I have followed enough sports. I've worked for enough flagship radio stations for sports networks that I can follow it enough. If Paige Beckers is the best player in college basketball, then why in the hell, after 5 minutes of that game, you didn't just route everything through her and say, take the game? This is not trickery. It's not shenanigans. You've got to throw your best weapons at that team and hope that they succeed. And it wasn't like, and I don't want to say this in a negative sense towards the exceptional defensive display by Destiny Henderson, who is the just insanely fast forward, I guess, for South Carolina, who is constantly in Paige Becker's face. But I noticed, especially in the third quarter, that Beckers was figuring out a way to get open and was taking shots. But then, as opposed to just saying, okay, get it out to Paige. Paige, you take the shot. You get a shot, you take a shot. They kept trying to, kind of push it in towards the paint, and lesser players who were having atrocious games were not doing it. So, I know that there was a lot of people, obviously, who talked about the local interest with Paige Beckers, and of course, every sports media personality in town going, oh my God, you're here. But I want to make sure last year she didn't win it. This year she didn't win it. She went to UConn to win national championships. Now, don't get me wrong, she'll have a pretty good career regardless. She'll have a pretty good career. She's, definitely destined for at least two or three Olympic teams. And, I'm definitely going to be a high WNBA pick if she wants to go play there. She could be a spokesperson. She could do whatever she wants to, really, when she gets done with this. She's going to have a nice career. But she wants those NCAA championships. And now that's 0 for 2. And, yeah, you got to the championship game, but women's basketball is a lot deeper than it used to be. There's two or three teams and everyone else. And now there's about 20 teams that legitimately could win it in any given year.
Yeah, I mean, you could even look at, what was it, the Sweet 16? We had a couple of double-digit seeds make it that far. And prior to the past few years, that was unheard of. It was pretty much all the teams that were favored to win advanced, and there weren't many upsets. And, yeah, you're right. Now we're actually getting some of those lower seeds having success. It's good for the game.
And I know why she went to UConn. I mean, that's a factory for championships. But no, Gophers, even with Paige Beckers, are about six players short. And nothing against the Gophers. I love them. But I understand why she did it. But now the question is the pressure on her to win in one of her last two seasons, presuming she doesn't do five. I mean, how do they do that again? Is that a fifth-year academic exemption or something?
Yeah, it's COVID kind of messed that up, because I know before it was you could get that fifth year if you redshirted of one of your other years, whether the team did that intentionally or if you got injured. But
yeah,
COVID might give you that fifth year, though.
And do not take anything away from Destiny Henderson. Holy God, what a game. 26 career-high points. You're going to do a career-high game. You do it in the championship game. Mwah. Love you. She was fantastic, and I'm actually one of those Insto fans. I hope the Lynx get her when she gets done with college, because she'd be fantastic. So, entertaining, you know, they won't come back here again. I don't know where they'll play the next two, but we'll have to see if Paige Beckers can win one with someone else. Gophers next year, they got a lot of players coming in. We'll have to see if that manifests itself into a winning program. But, you know, once I'd still think they're 3 years at best away from making a run. If things go their way, they get the best players, they're still 3 years away from making a solid run, I think.
Gopher's got to schedule UConn as a non-conference series. That'd be kind of fun. Do a home and home. I mean, they might not win either game, but.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Washington Generals. Oh, a little Harlem Globetrotters reference there. Oh, gosh, that would. Let's not do that, okay? I love my Gophers. I don't want them embarrassed.
You don't want to see them lose by 40
no,
points?
No, I do not. I don't want to see them lose by 40 points to Paige by herself. 9529. Metal Lark Lemon, where did you come from? 952-946-6205. By the way, I should mention the Twins have the opener coming up here on Thursday, supposedly. There's a decent suspicion they're going to move it to Friday. Did they do that yet, or do we know yet?
I haven't seen yet, but generally that is why Major League Baseball does have opening day for most teams, then that day off, just so teams can get an official opening day. And Friday looks nice if they do postpone it.
Yeah, it does. Sunday looks fantastic. 60 degrees and sunshine. It's going to be nice. But so they said they'll make a decision by tomorrow. If you have tickets to the home opener on Thursday, note you might need to use those on Friday. Or Brett and I would be the lovely recipients. If you need to get rid of them, thank you. No, seriously, we'd appreciate it. We can blow off the show, man.
We can get Patrick to produce. Maybe bring Todd in to guest host. We'll be covered.
Just have Patrick hum for 2 hours, man. It's 952-946-6205. Let's get Dr. Joe on the phone. While you do that, let me do the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. The COVID update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 473 newly reported cases, 5 newly reported deaths. The state's COVID death toll now is 12,415. Today's update includes case data in the 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Friday. Now, here's this note from Bring Me the News, who has been doing yeoman's work on bringing this information forward. Beginning today, the federal government no longer requires a significant number of testing facilities to report negative results. Therefore, the test positivity rate going forward will be skewed. Because of that, Bring Me the News will no longer include the 7-day test positivity rate. It will not be a reliable reflection of what's actually happening in the community. So we won't know what the numbers on the testing is going to be there, but we'll have to find out. Through April 1st, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 201, up from 189 reported on March 31st. Of those hospitalized, 28 people in intensive care, up from 26, 175 in non-ICU care. That's up from 163. That's not good. ICU admissions are still pretty low. As of March 30th, the state reported that 3,893,564 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,683,209 people have completed the vaccine series, and 2,547,922 people are up to date with their vaccine shots. Now, that does not include both boosters. That's just the single booster. Total number of cases of COVID in Minnesota, 1,430,556. New federal guidance on second COVID-19 booster doses has left many Minnesota vaccine recipients questioning when and if they should get another shot. I would say this. I'd get the shot. You know, if you're qualified, you'd get so. Monica Heltmez, 51, eagerly sought COVID-19 vaccinations last spring and a booster dose in November, but the occupational therapist isn't sure she wants a fourth dose now. The Dayton, Minnesota woman figured a breakthrough coronavirus infection in December already gave her immunity boost. Cases are low in Minnesota, so I think if I get any additional boost for a second vaccine, then I would want to wait and take it a little until a bigger threat was on the horizon. Well, newly eligible people snapped up pharmacy vaccine appointments this week. That's hardly the only person with that decision. Tuesday's federal guidance allowed second COVID-19 booster shots for people who are 50 and older, have weakened immune systems, or have only received two doses of the less effective Johnson & Johnson vaccine, but it didn't specifically recommend that people seek them. The expansion makes it easier to issue a strong booster recommendation in the event of another pandemic wave, but for now, even infectious disease experts are uncertain on that. Now, I'll say this. I was very happy to say my wife has got hers scheduled up. Hers is actually coming up here pretty quick. I've got mine scheduled up for May. We talked about that. Found out my mom actually got hers on the first day. She walked in. She's out in South Carolina. She walked in. They said, "You want a booster shot?" And okay, sure. Done. She's got hers taken care of. So I would highly recommend it. I have faith in science and numbers, and that's why I'm glad to welcome our next guest on here to talk a little bit more about BA2 and the next booster shot, Dr. Joseph Eastman. He is a scientist. He has studied with NASA, also with Colorado State University and the LTER, the Long-Term Ecological Research Team, as well as currently he is at the University of Texas Austin COVID modeling team. He's kind enough to join us from the Iron Range to talk a little bit about COVID. Dr. Joe, thank you very much. As always, I appreciate the time.
You betcha. My head is absolutely spinning right now.
Why? Why is your head spinning?
Oh, my gosh. You want the bad news or the worst news? Or
sure. Why not? Let's start the week off on the right foot here. Let's go with let's go with the worst news first. Let's get that out of the way.
Oh, my gosh. There's a new variant that's been detected and is already spiking in South Africa.
Uh-oh.
And it's a BA2 subvariant. And attached to this bugger is something they call the L452R genetic mutation, which is part of, you remember Delta?
Yeah.
Remember how deadly it was?
Yes.
Well, it's a hybrid of Delta and Omicron. And it's already raising havoc in South Africa right now, and it's just a matter of time before that thing gets here. And the biggest problem is it's very asymptomatic, so people don't know they got it. And then when they get the severe case, it's likely to cause some really big. Well, it increases the transmissivity, the infectivity and pathogenetics, mortality rates. So that's the worst news of the day.
Well, okay, let me go back to this and let's talk a little bit more about this. I was looking at the different variants of COVID, and Omicron was really interesting because it was resilient and against vaccines to a point, and that's what kind of made it was wildly wildly contagious, and it was somewhat, you know, kind of get around, you know, some level of vaccination. Where does this new variant, are they calling it BA2.2, or what's the name of this?
Right now it's classified as a subvariant subtype called BA2L452R.
Okay.
And that has to do with the genetic sequencing of this thing. It's like the Omicron. It looks at the vaccinations, and, you know, 80% of the time it's going to fight right through it. That's where that one is sitting right now. And I don't think they're going to contain it. It's already spreading. We don't know if it's from South Africa or if it came from somewhere else. So that's not going to hit for a while. But before that, we got other problems.
Well, and we'll get to the other problems here in a second. We should make a note. We still have flights coming in from South Africa to New York to Atlanta on a daily basis. So, I mean, if it's already down there, there's no restrictions on air travel right now. There's a decent chance it could already be in this country.
You're right. Oh. You're right. And we'll know that fairly quick. We're getting good at, you know, detecting it.
Yeah.
Detecting these things. But, boy, if it is here, it's going to spread like rapid fire. It's even more infectious than the BA2 by itself.
Well, thank gosh no one's wearing a mask anymore. All right, so that's the worst news. What's the less worse news? Let's go with that.
Well, I was trying to figure out over the weekend what's going on with this BA2, and boy, I'm I'm messing with model parameters and how it reacts to vaccinations and reinfections, et cetera. You know, usually we assume two infections from a variant and you're done with it. Well, I finally was able to get the surge right that's occurring in Europe, in Denmark and Germany, et cetera. And what I hypothesized is this thing can keep infecting you several times. It's not limited to two. That's the only way I could reproduce what's going on, which suggests that, you know, you talked about some of you were talking to that they were infected in December and they're like, oh, I'll write out the natural immunity. Well, this suggests that the Omicron natural immunity is quite short-lived and somewhat weak in terms of a relative sense. So that person needs to get their booster. I got mine second one last week, in fact. So, you know, we're not sure how much that's going to help us against this new variant that's coming in. And we're already seeing, like, Wisconsin's up 10% in their new cases. The Northeast is up, I think, around 40%. And it's all over in the wastewater out there. So they're starting their surge right now. It's just a matter of time before it gets here. And I have it moving in, like, within a week into Minnesota. And we should see the numbers tick up even more.
I want to ask you something, just if you don't mind us getting back to a bit of the science of this. I want you to explain to everyone out there, I mean, there are these other subvariants that are out there. I guarantee you there are some people that are probably hearing you and saying, oh, that's no big deal. We've had tons of variants here. What makes you look at a specific variant versus other variants and say, you know what, that's more of a problem. You can see you can see something going on there. What is it as a scientist when you see this L452R that's coming through? When you look at that, you say, okay, this is different than, remember, Mu was out, or there's other variants that just never really took off. What about it, that variant kind of, and we'll talk about it scientifically, steps forward and says, nope, this is one we're going to have to deal with?
Yeah, the first thing is it's already got a foothold in the country. So 80% of the cases in South Africa are already this new subvariant. But the thing that makes it stand out is because of this mutation, it's like Delta in that it really locks into your lung tissue, and which means it can sit there for a long time and just keep churning out a large viral load that people are, you know, hacking away with. And it's sometimes it can be asymptomatic, yet have a large load. So it's like a combination of the worst possible scenarios we can see, that because of that one mutation, like I say, it locks into the lung tissue really hard. And that's why it can sit there and reproduce for quite a while and incubate inside people.
So and just let me ask you this: when you look at a timeline here, and I don't know if you have this number, but how many weeks ago did all of a sudden this start showing up down in South Africa?
Oh, this has really been in about the last 10 days.
Wow!
I mean, just boom! All of a sudden, this thing appears and. We didn't ring the alarm bell at first, and probably should have, because if you look at it, it had an initial spike and then went down for a little while, and then all of a sudden, within a matter of a few days, it had more than tripled. Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, just a huge, rapid spread. So, but that really stood out, and alarm bells, I think, are going off all over the place right now.
And to be clear, when you talk about there's an increase in cases in Wisconsin right now, there's an increase in cases on the East Coast, we're not talking about this new Omicron variant, the subvariant of BA2, but we're talking about BA2. That's where we're seeing the BA2 really roll through right now, right?
That is correct. Yep, you're spot on with that. New England, like I say, is up over 40%. And, you know, the nationwide, we're just, it's ticked up just 1%. But it's just a matter of time before we see the numbers start creeping up. And my most recent forecast shows that we don't approach the numbers of BA1 we had in January, but right now I feel like I'm just blindly thrown at a dartboard with some of the characteristics I set in the model to simulate what's going on. And in Minnesota, I got it peaking around the first week of May now. And the other thing is, because it can keep reinfecting, or at least that's my theory. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen anyone refute it yet.
And your numbers back that up.
That's correct.
All right.
That's correct. So I think it could be worse than what the model's predicting, my model's predicting right now.
And we should mention, I said this kind of tongue in cheek. Right now, no one's wearing a mask. I was at the Y yesterday. I think there was three of us wearing a mask in the entire Y. A lot of people not wearing a mask. You have Easter coming on up here. And no, you're not going to get anyone setting off alarms and putting this into place. But it's a good reminder that we're not done with this pandemic, that this thing is not over, and the old things that we've been saying for the last 2 years are still true. Social distance, wear a mask, and if you can get vaccinated, get vaccinated, get boosted, get second boosted, correct?
That's so true. And, you know, booster-wise, about 45% of our population has gotten their first booster. But, of course, not many have gotten the second booster because it just was approved. So, you know, and it's aging. I went over the efficacy of the vaccine and how it's dropped below 50%, which means we're not winning the war. We're just kind of holding it in place right now. And in my report today to the Itasca Public Health, I said, you know, we've been sitting around the same number of cases now for, gosh, about 2 weeks, and it's starting to now very slowly tick up.
Well, and that's something, and by the way, that's something we've been talking about here. It was the positivity rate of tests went down, got down to 2.7, then it was 2.7 again, then it was 2.8, then it was 2.9, then it was 2.8, now back up to 2.9. Now they're not reporting it now because the federal government doesn't require negative test reporting anymore, so the numbers are going to get skewed. But the reality was you could see that we had gotten down. Last June, I think it was, we were down to 0.08 on a positivity infection rate. So it was way down lower than it is now. And so to be at, you know, kind of where we're at now, you know, it is a little concern because you could tell it wasn't going down. And the numbers I just reported on earlier, we've seen an increase in hospitalizations, saw a slight increase of ICUs patients. And that's how this all starts again.
Exactly. You're spot on. And, you know, remember last June, they were touting, oh, we're going to be free by the 4th of July. And we noticed the same thing going on. People not masking, social distancing, throw it out the window, you know, all that stuff's going on. How many times have we got to go through this before people realize we got to keep doing what we're doing? And even our CDC, you know, gosh, it's insanity, I think. We're repeating the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
This is why you like science. One last thing here before I go, because we're gone longer than I wanted, but you want to know the truth, Dr. Joe? I'm glad you come on and tell us this stuff, because right now no one's talking about this. I mean, you have to dig down to find anything about real numbers in the New York Times, CNN, any place like that. And so I'm glad you're talking about this. One thing I wanted to do clarify, though, when you talk about effectiveness rate, there might be people out there who are saying, well, then why get vaccinated if I only got a 50-50 chance? What we're really saying here is that getting vaccinated, you've got a pretty good immunity against a virus with the initial vaccination. It's how long that vaccination gives you immunity. That's the real question, right?
You're spot on.
Okay.
And it decays kind of like an exponential function. Quite slowly, 4 months, we're down. We're starting to hit the 50% mark after 4 to 5 months. So it's not like it's a lifetime thing. And the other thing is we really need a vaccine that specifically targets Omicron, but they haven't come out with it. I don't know what happened to Pfizer. They kind of dropped the ball on that one, and I can't find anything about that.
So, well, and to be honest and to be fair, Doc, if I can be honest, you know, if I can point this out, doing stuff like this is not easy. And so I imagine they've got a lot of people working on it. Maybe this is one of those that just it kind of eludes, you know, prevention for a while.
Yeah, I'm starting to wonder that. And what that does is it points out a need for a DNA-based vaccine, which is much more flexible. It responds to variants, you know, much better than this RNA, which is really specifically targeting a certain type of COVID variant. So, you know, I don't know what to say at this point. I mean, you know, 73% of the cases are asymptomatic right now, so we got people walking around don't even know they got it, and they're not wearing masks, and you know, it's a setup for disaster.
Our rainbow and a unicorn puppy dogs edition of the show today, courtesy of Dr. Joe Eastman. Doc, no, by all means, I want you coming on here. I want you to be honest. I don't want you candy coating it, because the reality is there are so few places right now that we're talking about the honest truth. Yeah, I'm glad you're here. Once again, your best advice, get vaccinated, wear a mask, and social distance, right?
You're correct. And thank you for spreading the word.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time as always. Dr. Joe Eastman, our COVID model expert, kind enough to join us with the sobering reality. We're not done with this pandemic yet, people. We're just not done. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Programming here brought to you by our good friend Todd Collett, who's over in Spain right now, and he's leading the charge as loud as he can about trying to help out the Ukrainians, as what's going on over there is just absolutely horrible. Just the story on Todd really quick. Todd lived in Minneapolis, St. Paul, moved to Spain, wanted to help support the station because he still listens to us online over in Spain. Hola. And so he does by sponsoring the show. You can, too. If you'd like more information, you call 952-946-8885, 952-946-8885. I'm just going to read this, what he said. My Irish-born friend Paul has been in Kyiv for 19 years and founded Lifeline Ukraine, a national professional suicide prevention and mental health support hotline operating 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He's been working as hard as he can to try to help promote this as well. Out there, because it is just a, you know, obviously there, you know, we saw what the Russians have done, and the mental health crisis alone. I mean, we're still dealing with an invasion of their country, the slaughter of their innocent civilians by the Russians. They need help on a lot of different levels. Please do. But by the way, if you can help out with Paul's hotline out there, Lifeline Ukraine, that would be fantastic. And thank you very much, Todd, for helping to sponsor AM 950. Brett, I did something here during the break. We decided to take a look because I had not heard anything about South Africa once again going and falling into the seventh circle of hell in regards to COVID. L452R, right? You and I just broke news because no one is talking about this variant. The only, well, I shouldn't say we didn't break news. The only place that's covering it is medical journals right now. So like the New England Journal of Medicine and some of these other ones, they're out there covering it. But you and I are, we are basically, you know, the only news outlet I know in the country. I checked in the news cycle, not a TV station, not a newspaper. No one is mentioning this new outbreak in South Africa.
Seems like we should be talking about this more, given what Dr. Eastman said during that last break. This thing does not sound good whatsoever.
And yeah, and I don't know. Is it yesterday's news? Is that where we're at?
I think so.
You know, just it's yesterday's news. We don't talk about it because, you know, hey, that's, you know, you're bringing us down, Mr. Negative guy. Please. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. And I don't want you bankrupt. And if now we're looking at a variant of Omicron that's as contagious as Omicron and as deadly as Delta, sweet Jesus, sign of the cross. Oh, my God. I guess technically you and I now are your medical news leader, the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950 in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Because quite literally, no one else is talking about it. If I can, on a quick side note, I have an old-time family friend. I grew up, I was born here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota proud. At a very young age, I moved to Rhode Island. Hey, small state, love your seafood. Lived out there in the town of Wickford, Rhode Island. No, and by the way, if you do go to Wickford, they all say Wickford. You know, it is. It's Quimby from The Simpsons. It really is. And East Greenwich, and I lived in East Greenwich as well, which is spelled Greenwich, but yeah, okay, just let it go. You know, they like to drop consonants and vowels whenever they feel like it.
Just out of curiosity, was this before or after you were in the South living for a while?
I was before, so. You know, I've got a Minnesota, New England, Southern accent.
Yeah, that's where I was going with that. I mean, you've got quite the variety of accents going in your upbringing.
And if you really listen, a little bit of German in there, too, from my military service days for 3 years over there. So, but, yeah, every once in a while I'll say, you know, I'll even occasionally go, Haba, what the hell did I just say? Harbor? Did I meant to say harbor? Not Haba. It's out in the Haba. Look at the boat in the Haba. Harbor. There, no, never. I occasionally will drop a y'all. What? Ugh, no. But I lived out in Rhode Island for a while. When we were out in Rhode Island, my mom made very good friends with a family down the street, the Olsons, and they have known each other for years. And I remember Raleigh was the name of the dad in that family. And he was one of the first people I knew that was a sprinter. And this is back in the days, and people don't remember this because it was, you know, physical exercise back in the 70s. It, you know, it was really Jane Fonda and fitness classes and the Nautilus stuff, which was, I think it was 76, 77. That's when things started, people started going to gyms and working out. Because before that, gyms were basically where boxers went to train. So he was a sprinter, and he'd go running down the street. And they had a son, and he was between my son, my brother, and I, as far as age. So he's basically my brother is about a year and a half older than me. So he was right in there, and Chris was his name. I have unfortunately had to deal with the same thing that a lot of you out there have had to deal with. I'm in my 50s now, and I am stunned every time I hear of a friend say, I've got cancer. My wife has cancer. I've lost three friends in the last few years to cancer. It is still just a disturbing disease, and yeah. And I'm going to get upset about something here. And I understand some people might say, well, is it really worth it? And I said, yeah, it is. It is. Chris just diagnosed with, he's my age, with spinal fluid cancer. Spinal fluid cancer, a very rare version of cancer. He's gone into hospice. He's my age. He's gone into hospice. Spinal fluid cancer. We talk about, you know, breast cancer and colon cancer. We talk prostate cancer. We talk, you know, stomach cancer. We even brain cancer. And then you discover there are these, all these other variants of cancer that are out there that are nefariously just waiting for to strike. And I believe in science. I believe in doctors. I believe in them. I think all you doctors and nurses, you're angels. You're absolute freaking angels. You really are. I believe you guys, and I hope someday that we can find the cure. But I want to lament something here as this story came in. And I just, it was as the story came on in, I saw a post about someone saying once again that the tests, the research done on ivermectin came back negative. And I got really angry. And here's why I got really angry. Much like when fools started saying vaccinations cause autism and all these other problems and pointed to a flawed study, which this person that did the study has even retracted. We have spent millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars to prove that that lie was a lie. Money we could have been using to, oh, I don't know, try to find a cure for cancer. Nope. Because some TV personality says something and doctors like, what? No. We have a responsibility to do due diligence and give the most wild and ludicrous suggestions merit and run them through the protocols. How much money did we just spend showing that a medication used to deworm horses by veterinarians, who would have guessed, is worthless at stopping COVID? Who? How much? How many millions of dollars? Multiple research, multiple studies coming out that have said, as a matter of fact, people that took ivermectin actually had worse results with COVID. Were you putting it up your butt? No, sorry. That's what they're saying. Drop trow. Say hi. Say hello. Woo-hoo. That's what you're doing. And because you guys went out there and said, this is right. And people like Dr. Scott Jensen were out there, medical professionals were saying, yeah, this looks legit. We forced the medical industry to have to put aside the test tubes and the beakers for cancer research. Or as Dr. Joe just mentioned, the research to try to figure out a vaccine specifically for Omicron. We had to put all that aside because a bunch of freaking Trump idiots decided to jam a horse dewormer up their cabooses and then were stunned that it wasn't working. And so we actually have the medical industry have to spend time and money instead of actually curing real problems, going on out there and trying to disprove something I could have told you would make no sense. You're wasting more than just the breath that comes through your stupid, twisted, lemming lips. You are. You're wasting more than your brain cells when you say, Donald Trump told me to take this medicine. I'm doing my own research, which basically means I'm just doing what Tucker Carlson said to do. So to have to prove to you morons staring at the freaking sun that you shouldn't stare at the sun, we're having to spend money that could do, research to try to stop spinal fluid cancer. We could be doing that. We could be trying to get an Omicron vaccine. Could be doing that. We could be trying to find a cure for cancer, whether that's prostate cancer, colon cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer. Pick one. We all know someone who's passed away. But we instead couldn't do that because Johnny Stupid in the corner there wants to drop his overalls and jam some horse dewormer up his backside. You're wasting more than just your breath with this stupidity and lunacy. You're taking money away from real research, real medical research, and forcing us to have to say, well, guess what? Remember when we told you we were stupid? Well, we've proven it actually scientifically. Now you're an idiot. There are consequences for your actions, and you want to sit there and say, it's my own individual choices. But basically, if we can imagine 5,000 people in a conservative town screaming, it's my individual choice, as you're all brainwashed by far rightos whose only goal is to sow distrust in you, in the system, in the government, in medicine, in doctors, in science, in Joe Biden, whatever. Their only goal is to make you dumber and stupid, and they get jollies off of watching you guys repeat everything they say to do because they don't have your best interest in heart. They're the first ones to scramble. So, well, I never said not to get vaccinated. I never said to not wear a mask. I was just saying that, bro, you shouldn't. And you're out there following what they're saying and saying, they're geniuses. They're the guy that likes bedtime cheeseburger and took a Sharpie to a weatherman. He's a genius. And so to stop you from hurting yourself, we have to dedicate actual real money that could be going and stopping real diseases to your cause to show you, yep, you're an idiot. So thank you. Thank you, idiots, for every person out there who has a loved one who is going through cancer, or any individual who is having cancer, or any serious disease, or the people that would love to get a vaccine for Omicron specifically. Thank you. Because of your ignorance and stupidity, we have wasted millions of dollars just so that we can officially say you're an idiot and you're stupid. Bravo. Mission accomplished. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I got to just tell you, I'm just tired of these people because they want to say, it's just me doing this. That's not doing anything wrong at all. No, it's just we have to spend money and time to basically tell you, well, you were an idiot. And you're not going to believe it anyway. And I don't know why we, to a point why we're even trying to stop you from hurting yourself. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Brett, if I told you, hey, I've got this product that's used to take worms from horses, you know what we could try to do? Use this on your sunburn. Would you allow me to do that?
No research whatsoever. As long as it's from someone I trusted on TV, yes.
Now, here's the best part. You need to drop your pants. Sorry.
As long as the politician I support still says to do it, I'll do it.
All right. Well, if they say so, let's go spelunking. 952-946-6205. Mike is in Columbia Heights. Welcome on in, Mike.
V. Gates,
my friend.
One thing, those people that took ivermectin, it did solve one of their problems. They no longer scoot on the carpet.
Well, sometimes you have to spray the lemon juice on them because to get them off some things you got to do that. bad. Get up off that floor, Grandpa. So, Mike, thank you.
Bye-bye.
952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Who could have ever believed the guys who were telling you to take a medication and put it up your backside that maybe they weren't really right? One thing that is right, I give Angie Craig a lot of credit here. U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill limiting the out-of-pocket costs to insulin at $35 a month. It's part of a years-long effort that's been going with mixed results to help cut the cost of prescription drugs. The bill was sponsored by Minnesota Congresswoman Angie Craig. According to the Minnesota Department of Health, 390,000 people in the state, that's 8.8% of the population, has type 1 diabetes. And do not listen to Dr. Jeremy, well, I call him Dr., it's Jeremy Munson, Dr. To Jeremy Munson, if I remember correctly, is what we defined him, when he walked into a Walmart and decided to A, become an insulin specialist, and B, a diabetic specialist without, if I'm not mistaken, he has no medical experience whatsoever at all, and he does not have diabetes. So do not trust him. The proposal was supposed to be part of President Joe Biden's Build Back Better Social Agenda program, which the president could not get enough votes for in the Senate. So Democrats are trying to get the legislation passed one piece at a time. I'm going to bet you anything that Manchin, whose daughter is really big in the pharmaceutical industry and is, you know, a multi, I think she's a billionaire now, might be in the hundreds of millions only, but, you know, so I guess living check to check. But I'm going to guarantee you he's going to fight this tooth and nail. Because God forbid you actually give medication that can save a human being's life at an affordable price. I led the fight in the budget process last year to make sure the Medicare price negotiation finally could begin in the country. It is ridiculous that the largest purchaser of healthcare, Medicare, in many United States can't negotiate its drug pricing. Yep, you're right. It is absolutely ludicrous that we give that loophole, because that's the reason why drugs in Canada are so cheap and drugs in England are so cheap and drugs in Germany are so cheap. Is because they negotiate as the country is the biggest buyer of any of those products to get a lower price. Doesn't mean that the businesses won't make a profit. Oh, they'll make tons of profit. It just is they won't make the obscene profits they're making by basically dangling life on a carrot in front of dying people. The House vote on insulin was mostly along party lines with three Minnesota Republicans, members of Congress, voting no because we want to make it as costly as possible. I'm guessing that's what their statement is. I don't know. I don't know. The insulin cost-cutting bill now goes to the U.S. Senate, where it's not clear if it can pass. I'm going to say a few Republicans might go along with it. But then again, let's just like a look at the latest Supreme Court nominee. Let's make sure we don't mix anything. The vast majority of Republicans are going to vote against her because she's black and a woman. If I guarantee you, a few Republicans would be voting for her if it was a white man. Guarantee it. But hey, black woman, I can't vote for her because do you see who I have to appeal to in the upcoming primaries? Exactly. Heaven forbid we actually have Common Sense rule. Heaven forbid. But now I guess we're going to have to. Did we ever do medical research on the light bulbs up the backside? Remember when Trump saying that? Maybe we should send a light bulb up there. Hour two of the show is up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show on your Monday, 5 o'clock hour rolling through. Goodbye, snow. The minute that sun came out, that snow had never had a chance. Once again, I will mention they're concerned possibly about a bad storm coming through on Thursday when the Twins opener is supposed to happen. So they might move that to Friday. They're expected to make that decision official. I think they should, just because then you get one of those few Friday games. And then you can, you know, you'll control a lot of the airways with that. I think that's a good idea. I think they're going to make that official decision tomorrow once they get a look at the weather. But it does look like it doesn't right now look like it's going to be too much snow. But, you know, if it looks like it's going to rain on that day, why not just move it to Friday when you already know it's going to be nice?
Yeah, exactly. No one wants to watch baseball in sleet and 35 degree weather. Oh, not God. Fun.
I was out there for one of those games one time. They weren't selling. They said they basically get every coffee pot they can get going because they hardly sell any beer. They only sell coffee when it gets that cold out there. So, what did you do all weekend long? You said you didn't watch any of the sports. What were you doing?
No, I didn't get a chance to watch much sports. No, I had some friends over on Saturday. Then Sunday had a chance to see another friend I hadn't seen in a while. So that's kind of what we did. Saturday, we watched a little bit of WrestleMania, of all things, that was on. So that was a little fun to do. So, yeah,
social interaction. Wow.
Yeah, there we go.
You don't know how foolish you are, my friend. Stay at home by yourself. I snuggled up to my streaming services, and I decided to watch some of the last movies from the Oscars that I'd not seen. Now, I watched Dune. I'll get that one out of the way first. Okay. Better than... did you ever see the one with Sting in it? And Kyle, was it Kyle MacLachlan and Sting in it from 1984, was it? It was bad because they just tried to jam way too much in that film. And I was watching the film. I was like, oh, you're doing a much better job with this. It's just too much of a thick story to buy to try to jam into it. I mean, they're doing a much better job of the story. And then I realized, oh, this is just part one of the movie. It's like about 40 minutes left of the movie. It's like, well, they got to wrap up a lot of stuff here. Oh, I can tell you right now, it's only going to be there's going to be a part one. So entertaining film. This is the second thing I've seen Timothée Chalamet in that was actually good, that he's actually can act. I saw Don't Look Up, and he plays a very hilarious character in that, a skateboarder who kind of ends up getting into a relationship with, what's her name, the lead actress in that movie.
Oh, yeah, why am I blanking?
We won't remember.
Yeah, it's one of the more well-known ones too.
That yeah, exactly.
Say, really, guys, you couldn't remember that?
Yeah, it's we're dumb. Anyway, but he's fantastic in that one, and then he's also very good in Dune. So that one won a lot of the visual effects and things. I still don't think that movie was as pretty as Power of the Dog. Power of the Dog, the cinematography in Power of the Dog was exceptional. Now, I did also watch King Richard. And what I will say is there are moments in that film which, after what happened in the movie, are somewhat hard to watch. Or not in the movie, in the Oscars, are somewhat hard to watch. I had watched, and just to give you the lay of the land here, I've watched Benedict Cumberbatch, Power of the Dog, Andrew Garfield, Tick, Tick, Boom, Javier Bardem being the Ricardos. I did not think Javier deserved the Oscar. Andrew Garfield was very good. I thought to a point he might be kind of the dark horse candidate, might pull the upset off, but he was quite good there. Benedict Cumberbatch was haunting. I mean, he was Daniel Day-Lewis in There Will Be Blood. I mean, just you could not stop thinking about the character for a week afterwards. King Richard, the story of Venus Serena Williams, which is just made for the movies. I mean, that story is made to be put on the screen. And the actress they had who played young Serena, is it Demi Singleton is her name? Holy God, she looks exactly like Serena Williams. I couldn't believe it. Every time I saw it, it's like, that kid looks exactly like young Serena. It was amazing. Amazing. I will say this. Anjouie Ellis, I think that's how you say her name. Anjouie Ellis is the mom in that movie. She got robbed. I don't know if she would have qualified for Best Actress or Best Supporting Actress, but she was phenomenal in that film. And here's the beef. She was better than Will Smith was in that film. Now, was Will Smith good? Very good. And interesting as the father running the balance beam between, you know, supportive, trying to help the kids get there, and almost maniacal, and ending up being right in the end. As he guides his daughters to superstardom through their ability, not through just, you know, flash and style. I mean, they both were just top-notch tennis players. I want to be careful here because there are going to be people who will say, okay, you know, that's not fair. I just didn't think, I mean, it was a nice story. I thought Anjouie Ellis definitely deserved an Oscar. Will Smith was good. Definitely better than Javier Bardem in being the Ricardos, but was he better than Benedict Cumberbatch in that movie? Now, here's the outlier, and this is my friends who watch a lot of films have said this. They say you have to see Denzel Washington as Macbeth because he was the fifth nominee, and I have not seen it. Where is that one streaming? Is that Apple? Is that on Apple?
I'm not even sure. Yeah, let me look it up.
See if you can find out where that one's streaming. I would love to watch that one. And I have a lot of friends who are actors who have said, it's hard to convey Shakespeare just standing on a stage reading it. To act it out is one of the toughest things. That's why it's kind of the standard that they always, the best actors do the Shakespeare. They have said Denzel Washington is the best Macbeth they've ever seen. And hands down, they were shocked he was not getting more talk to be the winner for the Oscar. Is it? Does it say what's on Apple?
It's Apple TV.
Oh, God, no!
I'm in the same boat as you. I don't have Apple TV.
I don't need another streaming service. You made me get Peacock for the damn Olympics. I'm not doing that again. God.
Yeah, we get some consolidation.
No. No, we can't. Not anymore. So I will, when the DVD comes out of the Tragedy Macbeth, I will get that and watch that. That's the one that's the one I'm most intrigued by. That the people I know that are in acting, and they've said the same thing. They said that Denzel Washington was robbed. He was truly magnificent and the best Macbeth they've ever seen. So I want to see it. And that was the Coen brothers that did that one? And, Francis McDormand's in that? Just, yeah. And they told in a very, kind of traditional staging way, which just looked phenomenal. So I've got to see that one. I can't make until I see them all, I can't make the decision. And that one is definitely high on my list because I love Macbeth. It's, everyone dies in that one. I think the only people left are the invading army goes, where is everybody? Oh, they're all dead. All right, we win. Yay! I'm paraphrasing the end of that a little bit, but and I'm not ruining. For God's sakes, read Shakespeare.
Spoilers
Curtis,
for Shakespeare.
Curtis, your eighth grade class you didn't pay attention to. No, you should have read.
That's on you, yeah.
That's really, I'm not going to be, it's not like I'm telling you how Power of the Dog ended up. Yee, by the way. That's the official review. But no, I've got to go see that. Just frankly, I specifically wanted to go into that movie not thinking about what happened to the Oscars and evaluating him, and I just came away saying it was good, definitely worthy of the nomination. I do not think it was better than Benedict Cumberbatch. It was better than Javier Bardem. It was better than Andrew Garfield, and then the Denzel Washington thing. I still have to see that before I can make a final assessment, but that was there. But once again, how did his wife in that movie not get nominated? She was really the soul of that entire movie. And she was phenomenal the entire movie. And I don't know what the delineation is between actress and supporting actress, how much screen time you need to get. But that was my wife and I were looking at each other like, how did she not win? She was great. She was great. And like I said, the casting of Serena, go watch that movie and you're like, holy God, that kid looks exactly like young Serena Williams. I mean, shockingly, like they, did they do that thing with like Henry Pym in the Marvel movies where they de-aged them? Is it actually Serena? They kind of just did the Marvel superhero de-aging technique for this? Phenomenal. Very entertaining film. Go see that one. That's actually worth watching just because the story in that alone is, that's a story. That's a great story. And an American story. That is American success story. That it definitely should be watched. Definitely deserved to get nominated. Definitely Will Smith did, but I think I'm going to go back and forth. I'm torn. I'm torn. And now I got to see Macbeth. Thanks, Apple. What else is on Apple? That's the code is on Apple too.
I think it is. Yeah, yeah.
Damn it! I don't want to buy it for like three movies. I mean, that's Hulu, man. Why do I have Hulu? Why do I have Hulu? Can someone explain Hulu? I've watched Deadpool like 8 times already. I mean, that's all I got on that. Oh, look, it's another Nicolas Cage, throwaway movie. Oh, great. All right, I'm not watching that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I'll tell you what, I'm going to take a break a little early here. I published something on the blog today. I got a little interested. A few weeks back, we had daylight savings time. And there was this bellowing from the side about, we need to end it. It saves no money. It kills all these people. Okay. And we need to end it immediately. And so I took the time, far more time than I did want to take in this. And I actually, for a month, have been reading articles and reports and studies, and I've come to some interesting conclusions. And I'll get to that when we do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. The Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Clarifying something, you just saw the picture of the girl who played Serena Williams in King Richard. She looks exactly like Serena.
Yeah. If the caption didn't tell me which one was which, I probably wouldn't know. In some of these, I mean, the facial features, everything.
Just amazing.
Like a clone. It's crazy.
Anjouin Ellis was nominated for supporting role. And I'll put it this way. I thought it was, once I watched Power of the Dog, I thought Kirsten Dunst was going to win that. She was miles better than Kirsten Dunst. I haven't seen The Lost Daughter with Jesse Buckley or Judi Dench in Belfast. I haven't seen those two yet. But Ariana DeBose won it for West Side Story. She was the winner on that. I think she got robbed. I think she got robbed. Holy God. Go watch that for her acting performance alone. It's phenomenal. She's phenomenal in that. 952-946-6205. So, a few weeks back, we had daylight savings time, and I have it's always been amazing to me because I don't think I've always bought the narrative that it saves energy, that's why we do it. Okie doke. And it's not. Yes, I've got kids. Trust me, I've got kids. And when daylight savings time comes through, it's a pain in the tuchus. But it's 1 hour once a year. We end up getting able to sleep in November. We get an extra hour then. I didn't really think it was that much of a grand sacrifice. But yet we have these people that have been out there who are like, this is the worst thing that happens in America today. And you're like, really? And part of me wonders if this is something I have coined the phrase ugly populism. And I think the most common example of ugly populism I can come up with is the Sunday liquor store issue. Now, I'm not saying it was ugly as an issue. No, it's a legitimate issue, but it's a minor issue, really. You know, pretty much only a problem for heavy drinkers that can't plan ahead. I didn't realize it was there, but to watch, especially the 30 and younger crowd, screaming at the top of their lungs, you're violating our rights because I can't get a pony keg, a special export on a Sunday. Really? Okay. I was a little surprised by that, but needless to say, they changed it. But I call it ugly populism because it's such a minor issue and to see such passion about this. But yet, when workers' rights are on the ballot, nope, no passion there. When a woman's right to choose is on the ballot, no, not really. When education, the environment, the arts, you know, any of that stuff is on the ballot. No, not really. But you know, Sunday liquor sales, I'm going to be protesting on the street for months. That's what I call ugly populism. It's because it's populism, but it's populism being used to basically change such a minor issue that, okay, fine, I guess we're slightly better because of it, and I don't know what the case is. So this is why I was looking at the daylight savings time, people like upset about this and saying, you know, is this just ugly populism? Is this just people trying to say, you know, take the mild inconvenience of springing ahead 1 hour in spring, in early March, and trying to turn that into the grandest injustice of all time? And the big red flag for me is whenever I hear people talk about, you know, the idea of, oh, it's killing people, causes so many car accidents, oh my gosh, it doesn't save us any money, why are we doing this? And so you get this hyperbole that goes along with it, right? And that, my experience in politics has been, whenever I hear stuff like that, it's generally Republicans trying to add provenance and get followers to their idea. They try to turn the smallest little thing, the molehill, into the biggest mountain of all time. But then, a few weeks back, one of the Democrats of the day, and I can't remember when it was, the guy from Golden Valley, was on, and he was saying, oh no, this is a huge problem, and we got to get this fixed. So I said, I mean, it was after, give you an idea how freaking long I've been researching this. And a lot of these studies and reports, they're a smidge dry. Just a smidge. It's been since him, and I think it was right before daylight savings, like early February, we had him on the air.
Yeah, that was in the news because I think that's when the U.S. House inadvertently passed that bill to get rid of daylight savings time.
So I went out and I took the time and I said, okay, how legitimate is this argument? And I wrote about this all. If you go to Progressive Citizen X, the blog that's on Blogspot, that's me. Hello. You can read this whole thing here, but I'll break it down for you here if you're, you know, like most people today and just adverse to reading. Because that's just where we're at as a society, isn't it? Okay, so the first question is, all these people are talking about, they would scream, it doesn't save us any money at all. It doesn't. And so I went in, it's like, okay, does daylight savings time actually save on energy use? Now, the vast majority of people who are screaming about this not saving money are only looking at domestic energy use. When you look at energy use as a whole, there are three different separate categories, really. Domestic, which is your house, commercial, which is businesses and industries, and then municipal, your city, okay? When you look just at domestic energy use, yeah, they're right. You don't really save any energy with daylight savings time. And it's not too much of a surprise. I mean, even into the 50s, most people didn't have a plethora of electrical items, things that they would use all the time. Today, you have an air conditioner, you have a heater, you got a fan, you've got a hot, probably maybe, you know, depending if you might have an electric hot water heater, you have computers, televisions, charging cords, a litany of smart appliances, which are constantly on. I mean, our basically our households do not ever stop kind of like they used to. It used to be, you know, when they used to talk about Cedric Adams, when he used to be on the radio here and people, he'd get done with his radio show and you could see all the lights in the Twin Cities shut off at the same time because everyone went to bed and the house was there. You didn't have 15 appliances saying, how do I kill my master tomorrow? You know, you don't have that. You don't have 16 items charging. Your kid's cell phone's on zero, trying desperately to get juice by the time they get to the morning. So that doesn't surprise me. But the problem is that's only one element of the story. And by the way, I should mention, there are quite a few reports that show that if you look at just domestic energy use in certain regions, that daylight savings time actually is worse than standard time. But once again, specific regions can't paint that as a picture across the country. All right. Now, when you factor in all types of energy use, you get a very interesting side note here. It indeed does save us energy. At least, and I want to make sure I put this out there as a precursor, pre-pandemic, because of the obvious thing. If you take, and once again, what's daylight savings time? You take that hour of light that you have pre-dawn in spring, summer, early April, you move it to the evening, and then basically what ends up happening is you don't have to turn on lights as early. There's where most of your savings happen in the commercial side, your industry, your jobs, when all of a sudden businesses can shut off lights because it's 8, or don't even have to turn lights on because it's 8 o'clock and it's still light outside. That's where you save money. Municipalities not having to turn on lights in their parks until 8:30, 9 o'clock at night because it's light out. There's where most of your energy savings are. Now, it's interesting. Take a guess, Brett. Who in the United States is in charge? What government department is in charge of daylight savings time?
Oh, no. That's a good question right there.
Do you know?
I don't know, no. For some reason, I would even think like the EPA or some weird agency that I wouldn't expect.
It's the Department of Transportation.
Yeah, I would have never guessed that in a million years.
Because the Department of Transportation actually controls, is basically in charge of the time zones. And since they're in charge of the time zones, they're respectively in charge of the Department of Daylight Savings Time. Their reports state that daylight savings time still saves us, even though it was better, it still saves about 1% of our energy use every year, which is a lot of energy. A lot of energy. Also, and I'm just going to read this one paragraph here. A study, this is from the Department of Energy, who looked into expanding out daylight savings time back in 2008. Just looking at the energy savings we got from the additional 4 weeks of daylight savings time, not as a whole. And they discovered just in those 4 weeks of expanding daylight savings time out, They made they saved enough energy to power 100,000 households in the U.S. for a year. It saves money. You may not like that, and I know that there are probably people out there, no, it doesn't. Well, look at your study, because a lot of people point to a study that Yale did, I think it's Yale, did out of Indiana that looked only at domestic energy use in Indiana and say, that's the proof. No, it's not. It's dishonest to represent only domestic energy use as overall use. You have to look at commercial use, municipality use, as well as domestic use. And when you factor them all three together, you actually still save money. That's a reality. Doesn't mean domestic energy use isn't a lot higher than it used to be. It just is. It's even as though our domestic side is using far more energy, the savings on the commercial side and the municipal side actually override that. Tell you what, let's get Matt in Minneapolis in here before we get to the break. Matt, welcome on in.
Hey, how's it going, Matt?
Going well, sir.
Okay, yeah, I'm reading this book called F Silence, and it's calling Trump out for the cultish, moronic, authoritarian con man he is by a Republican, Joe Walsh, not Rocky Mountain Way dude, you know. But it is a very eye-opening book, and you can get it from Minneapolis Public Library. And so this is like the first time I've even seen a Republican person who is also a radio personality calling him out. So what do you think of that?
Thanks, Matt. I appreciate the phone call. I will say here's the deal, and if I may. I know a lot of Republicans in the suburbs who are sitting there and look at me and it's like, I'm not going to vote for you. Look at these guys, these clowns, these anti-vax clowns. You look at these guys, they love Trump. They still think the 2020 election was a fraud. All these things. I still think all this stuff, yep, I can't believe where my party is going. Come November of 2022, they will all go into the ballot box and they will all vote Republican. They could have a Republican who goes out in the streets and kills teenagers and then bathes in their entrails in the middle of the street. And they're just like, holy God, is that a bad guy? But when they go in there to the ballot box, they just cannot stop themselves from voting Republican. So it's nice to see some people out there that are fighting this, but the reality is unless a large portion of the Republican Party changes from the brainwashing that they have been getting for the last 40 years, well, this comes down to, do the Democrats show up? And right now, the Democrats have to show up. Hold on, Bob. I'll get your call here in just a moment. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. When I come back, I'll address the, does daylight savings time kill all these people? Actually, you'd be surprised. It does not do good. I'll get into that. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Bob is in Northeast Minneapolis. Bob, thanks for holding. Welcome on into the show.
Hey, thanks for doing that deep dive there, Matt. I did a little bit of research myself, but it's been a few years. But I kind of found the same info that you were coming up with. Mm-hmm. There's a study, I think it's out of Sweden, that showed heart attack spikes were up after the change.
I'm going to get to that here. There's quite a few studies on that, and that's a really interesting side note on it for sure.
Yeah, but about the same energy savings, and I think it was taking the aggregate of energy use. But here's my point, is that it to me, it speaks of the arrogance of humans in that thinking. Like, this whole construct of time, it's pretty abstract, and we tie it to clocks, which we made. I think we've got them down pretty good as far as circling the Earth, you know, however many seconds in a year kind of thing, so that's why we have leap years and all that. But if you don't like it, and you're justifying it for whatever reasons for your business, well, just change your business hours. Because I remember back in the day when the changes would come up, there were a good handful of businesses that would just change the hours so that basically you're going in at the same, you know, nature time.
Yeah.
Even though it's a different, an hour difference on the clock time.
Well, and
don't
go ahead.
And don't get me started about Newfoundland or whatever.
the half case there. Bob, Bob, I appreciate the phone call. Thank you very much. Because he's right. And I'm going to get to something here in a second here, because there is a personal responsibility element here that we're not talking about. But for those people out there saying, well, what's the big deal? Let's just stop doing it. There's a few problems with that. I'll get to that as well. Now, let's go to the next question. Does daylight savings time lead to a massive die-off every year? Because that's kind of the narrative now. Do you know how many people die because of daylight savings time? Now, I got to tell you the truth. I'm somewhat stunned by this, because when it comes to heart attacks, there is definitely something there. There have been numerous studies. He mentioned the Swedish study, also other studies in Europe. I read three studies in the United States that dealt with the heart attacks alone. There is a mysterious rise in heart attacks the first week of daylight savings time. Studies in both the USA and Europe point to a disruption of sleep patterns and biological rhythms as the likely culprits, but the reality is the medical experts don't exactly know why this phenomenon is happening, but it is definitively happening. Heart attacks rise about 5% in the first week of daylight savings time, and that means definitively some people are dying, possibly because of daylight savings time. On top of that, there's also this argument that the anti-daylight saving time people like to put forward, that the traffic accidents in the first week of daylight saving time are increased somewhere around 6%. And basically, this is chalked up to sleepy drivers, but going back with what Bob just said, well, then why don't you just go to bed a little earlier or not leave until later? And that's an option, right? You could just, is it daylight savings time that you're sleepy, or is it the fact that you didn't get enough rest? And you can, oh, it's not like someone says, oh, by the way, before you go to bed, it's daylight savings time. Ha ha ha. No, you know it's coming up.
And worst case, you're tired for a day, then you're fine and you're used to it. It's one day maybe of inconvenience.
On the other side of this. So, I mean, okay, once again, before people go, yeah, I'll play this. No, apparently there is definitively a increase in heart attacks after daylight savings time, and an increase of traffic accidents in the week after daylight savings time. A Rand Corporation study went through and looked at the effects of daylight, the extra daylight in the evening with daylight savings time on traffic. Over the entire daylight savings time, accidents involving vehicles because of sunlight still being available is down 6 to 10%. Traffic accidents involving vehicles and pedestrians is down 8 to 11%. Undoubtedly, we have saved lives because of that. Because it's lighter out later, people can see more clearly, and there's not as many accidents. So here's then the question. If you just, I mean, I understand, you can probably sit there and downplay and say, oh, that doesn't matter in regards to the accidents that are saved. But those are over the entire daylight savings time, not just the 1 week after we switch 1 hour on the clock. That is for the entire thing. Those are dramatic decreases. Undoubtedly, more people are saved by that extra hour in the evening as far as the lesser amount of traffic accidents than are lost in that 1 week because of the heart attacks and the cars. Now, once again, I'm not downplaying this, and that's a tragic thing, but if we're going to evaluate this fairly, clearly a lot more people are saved by that extra light of sunlight in the evening hours, where people then can see on the roads clearer. And once again, the Rand Corporation is the one that did that study. And I thought that was a very interesting counterpoint. So, I mean, fine, you want to call it a wash, it's a wash. But the reality is a lot of people actually have been saved because of daylight savings time. So let's start with the problems here of the consequences if we did get rid of it. Now, first of all, there is in this anti-daylight saving time argument, I guess you'd say, there is a lack of consensus on what we should do. Should we stay with daylight savings time all year round, or should we go back to standard time all year round, because that's what we used to be. It used to be standard time all year round, and you know, a lot of people will say we should do that, but you do have some people who say no, we should stay with daylight saving time. And one of the things which is interesting is there was one guy that was saying this, and he actually was confronted saying, "Well, what you're saying is that you yourself are acknowledging there's a value in shifting that hour into the evening during the summer if you are doing that. You're just basically trying to get it to where you don't have to change the hours at all. So you're acknowledging this," and that person went off. I mean, just it was in this comment, it was not pretty. So you've got to get people on the same calendar here, because right now that is an interesting fight that is within the anti-daylight saving time crowd. Is do you stay with daylight saving time all year round, or do you go back to standard time all year round? Here's where it gets tricky. And I went and I tried my best to see how many of the anti-daylight saving time reports, articles, studies were receiving money from the oil, gas, and coal industry. Because the one thing that the one group that's definitively going to benefit from this, I mean, if you are looking at the numbers and you're saying, indeed, we are saving money when you look at commercial, domestic, and municipal energy sales, if we do not have this, then we're going to lose money. That means the oil, coal, and gas industry is going to make more money. Part of me wonders if this is the whole thing. They know that renewable energy is coming. They know that climate change is happening. They know they're going to have to stop at some point. And so this is a last ditch effort to grab as much coin as possible. I think it's a very likely potential there. It's very difficult considering the parent companies and shadow organizations that the industry creates to basically look like they're independent neutral sources to determine who's behind what. There's one or two groups that I know have some questionable ties, but I can't say for sure. Now, let's talk a little bit about the health issue if we were to get rid of daylight savings, okay? Let's talk about that. Because this is one of those things, when I talk about ugly populism, what you're saying is this: you're so outraged about 1 hour shift in spring that you've got to change the whole thing. And you're trying to get as many people on board as possible. But what you don't, I think, want people to do is start thinking about the world they're about to go back to or going to change and inherit if they basically change this. Now, let's start with the staying on daylight savings time, which basically means come November, we do not fall back. We just stay in the same time and we go through this through the entire year. Little magical side note for you. Come December, the end of December, early January, your sunrise will be 8:50 in the morning. That will be your sunrise. And Minneapolis is in the central part of the central time zone. When you look at some of these cities that are on the western side of these time zones, Indianapolis is one I went and looked up. Their sunrise in early January will be 9:05 a.m. Now, you want to sit there and definitely talk about the problems with heart attacks and stuff like that. Not saying that that's not legit, nor am I saying that tired people. I'm not saying that. Just let's go a season affective disorder. You're telling me that you're not going to see a massive increase in depression and sadness and possibly suicide attempts when all of a sudden the sun's not even coming up until 9 in the freaking morning? Please. For a lot of people, the holidays are depressing as it is. If now all of a sudden it's just dark until 9 o'clock and people are and I can't even comprehend the extra energy we're going to have to burn to basically light the planet from 6 a.m. till 9 a.m. every day because people are on the road trying to go to the office. So that doesn't make sense. So fine, let's return to standard time. Okay, now, I'll point out, under that argument, we would lose all the lives we saved with the extra daylight in the evening on the cars, right? That was kind of one of the things that we talked about with the RAND report on that. But let's just look at the old sunrise for standard time in June, late June of any given year. Hope you're an early riser. The sunrise in late June in Minneapolis, 4:24 a.m. That's the sunrise. It's going to start getting pretty light out at 3:45 a.m. God. Ah. The day will get 3:45 a.m. And once again, let's look at it. We're in the central part of that time zone. Let's go to Portland, Maine. Portland, Maine, on the far eastern side of the eastern time zone, their sunrise, the sunrise, will be at 3:57 a.m.
And getting lighted about 3:15.
3:15 in the morning, it's all of a sudden the light's starting to come on out. Holy God. Now, you want to talk about lack of sleep. Well, first of all, you're basically saying to people you need to go out and buy heavy-duty blinds and shades to completely shut down your apartment windows and all this stuff because, heaven forbid, light comes in the window. I mean, you're going to have to go get like hotel-grade curtains and stuff, which is going to be pricey. But for most people, they won't be able to afford that. So you're going to have people getting a lot of crap sleep, and you're going to have a heck of a lot more people tired driving around because they were woken up at 4:30 in the morning by Johnny's son over there. I can't even comprehend how tired America will be from mid-May until mid-July. Because all of a sudden the sun is like, hello there, we're awake now, wee. God, that's brutal. So there would be a definite downside there. My conclusion comes to this. Just suck it up and just do the damn daylight savings time. It still saves us money. It's one freaking hour in spring. You get the hour back in November. No one really complains about it then. You notice that? But can I make this point? And this is the final point I made in the article, and I do sincerely mean this. This is just ugly populism. And it's basically taking a minor issue, trying to turn it into the grand issue. And the reality is once you do this, we are almost immediately going to see more bouts of ugly populism because the same exact people who bitch and moan about springing ahead once a year will be the same ones bitching and moaning because the sun's up at 4:30 in the morning in June or the sun doesn't rise until 9 o'clock in December. They'll be the same exact people bitching and moaning, why doesn't somebody do something about this? And the real treat of ugly populism is probably one of the people who's railing as hard as they can against daylight savings time will be the first one to suggest, maybe we should bring daylight savings time back. You think? Just save us the time. Quite literally, save us the time. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Reminder, Native Roots Radio is coming up here in the 6 o'clock hour. Stay with them. Robert Pilot and crew there. Fantastic show. Absolutely a privilege to be the lead in for them. That's 6 o'clock hour right here. Native Roots Radio, I'm awake on AM 950. By the way, if you do want to read the entire article I wrote, by all means, please do. Progressive Citizen X, that's the name of the blog. You're more than welcome to. Enjoy that. All right. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. A sad story here. Washington County Attorney Pete Orput died Sunday in his home in Stillwater after being diagnosed with cancer, county officials announced. He was 66 years old. Orput, who has served as Washington County's top prosecutor for 11 years, had recently emailed staff and notified friends about his diagnosis. It just happened so quickly. It's so devastating and sad, said Ramsey County attorney and friend John Choi. Choi said Orput had told him just last week he was battling stage four stomach cancer. Sweet Lord. We all thought we'd have time to connect. It just happened so abruptly over the weekend. I had that happen too. We had a friend who had cancer, and I said to myself, oh, I'll make sure I stop, try to stop on by. And the next thing I know, they were in hospice, and they were gone. It was a month. Ugh. Orpin announced in January he would not seek re-election for a fourth term in office and he planned to retire at the end of the year. That announcement came more than a year after he'd been diagnosed with Parkinson's. It's sometimes thankless, but I think it's still been the greatest opportunity of my life, he said of his 11 years as county attorney. He was such a straight shooter and really passionate person, said Choi, who struck up a friendship with Orpin after both being elected to their respective county attorney seats in 2010. His passion was really infectious. He cared about the community and just people in general. I'm very sad. And to everyone in Washington County, all of his supporters, very sad story indeed. And if I may touch back on my rant from the 4 o'clock hour, this is yet another person we've lost to cancer. Another person we've lost to cancer. So before you sit there and start saying, you know, I need to start rubbing fish food in my eyes because that's going to cure my COVID. By the way, I'm not saying, sweet Jesus, don't do that, you morons. Don't do that. That's not a suggestion. This is me mocking you. But if you are one of those people that suggests something like that, realize that if enough of you fools start going down that path, that the medical side is going to have to start putting time and money into, well, does rubbing fish food in your eyes stop COVID? Well, what do you know? No, it doesn't. Doesn't do anything of the sort. As a matter of fact, damages your sight pretty bad, you say. Well, then you probably should stop doing it. And instead, for the betterment of us all, let's let the medical community, the scientific community, let's let them go on out there and challenge and try to find cures for these diseases that all of us are suffering from, whether that's individually or if that is as well as a family member or a loved one. 952-946-6205. They released last thing here before we get to the end of the show. They released the 10 most popular state fair foods booths from the state fair, but not a surprise to anyone. They all plummeted by 35% last year. Hundreds of small businesses in Minnesota rely on an annual event, the state fair, to have, and some have used it as a stepping stone to create year-round opportunities. The state fair released food vendor revenue data for 2021 after Axios had requested it last week. The decline in revenue is in line with the drop of attendance of the 2021 State Fair. With 1.3 million visitors in 2021, State Fair attendance was down 39% compared with 2019. The Delta variant dampened the fair's comeback after the full cancellation in 2020. It's not clear yet how much of the vendors' sales numbers from 2021 will affect turnover at the State Fair. While the big vendors will likely be fine, the smaller and newer ones don't have the same resources. About 150 vendors pulled out before last year's fair. The fair typically renews and issues licenses in April and May and has a better indication for repeated vendors in June, according to a spokesperson. Bill Wozniak, who owns the Fresh French Fries with his family, once again, $5 for the small cup, $6 for a vat that you need a Sherpa to carry. I don't know. I don't understand the math there, but okay. He's predicting a major bounce back at the state fair attendance this summer. Rising costs are a major concern for vendors. For example, costs for soybean oil, one of the three ingredients of the fries, have tripled over the past 2 years. Sweet Martha's Cookies remains the most popular vendor by a mile. After hitting $5 million in sales in 2019, it came in at $3.3 million in 2021. I still think they're probably doing pretty good. And once again, don't understand your price structure. I do. $4 for six. $5 gets me 500. Okay. Delicious. Have a good one. We are back on a Tuesday. Till then, see ya.